Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from not one but two technology experts. But that is not just what we call ourselves. It's also what our moms tell people when they don't know what the heck is going on, really just in general, but specifically mainly in regards to technology. And then we sort of help them, right? And so because of that, we've gained a reputation as being people that could be considered experts in technology, at least through the lens of our boomer parents, who, let's be honest, are not, in fact, experts in technology. And so, therefore, therein, in some ways, our expertise, as quoted in this intro, is really more a commentary on how we are perceived, but not, in fact, on how we are, because we're not, in fact, that knowledgeable. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
Oh, sorry, I fell asleep there for a second. I'm your That's host, right. Noah Rubin. On the show, unless you've just completely changed the fundamentals of the show, I believe that on the show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success. And I think that we also have a laugh or two along the way, although I don't know. You got a little philosophical there, so I'm not sure if we're funny anymore.
I think you nailed it right on the head there, Noah. I think that's exactly the case. And I'm not trying to change anything. I'm merely exposing our true colors, I would say.
I see. I think that was the most detailed explanation. I think it took 118 episodes, but we finally fully explained what it is that we're doing here. That could have maybe been an episode one thing, but you know, it's all good.
Well, you know, better late than never. That's what they always say. And
it's true.
We've at least caused one person to unsubscribe. So I felt that it was necessary after 118 episodes to come clean. You know, we crafted that intro not to brag of our own expertise, but to reflect about how we are seen in the eyes of our creators.
Yes, truly, truly.
Truly. But I'll tell you one thing.
What?
I've made a terrible mistake, Noah. I sold this RAM on eBay because I had extra RAM, so I listed this for sale. But then I realized that I can't be bothered because, like, it sold for $8. And now I have to go do a whole trip to the post office. It's 8 gigs.
Okay.
It's $1 a gig, you know. But nobody wants this. No, because the thing is, Noah, nobody's upgrading to 8 gigabytes of RAM, okay? Nobody goes to 8 gigabytes of RAM. They upgrade from 8 gigabytes of RAM. So this is effectively, I could just throw this in the laundry hamper and run it through the wash, and it would be about as useful as it is now. But I did sell it for $8. And now, I mean, after my fees, I think I'm going to get a direct deposit for approximately $5.21, all of which will be spent in the amount of time it takes me to go to the post office, get an envelope and a stamp, and off it goes. Actually, wait, how much am I going to have to pay to ship this gosh dang RAM? Is it even, why did I do this? Why did I list that? Am I
for
stupid?
$8? For $8? That's, ugh.
Bro, the shipping label's 10?
No, you can, wait, where's it going? I'm sure you can get something cheaper than that.
That's what they're charging me. Wait, I'm not paying for this. They're saying the maximum weight is 150 pounds. 150 ounces would be many times the weight. Max dimensions, 165 inches. How about millimeters? Why not that? What? And they only paid me $7 for shipping. I'm taking a loss on this RAM now. I'm now donating RAM to charity.
Wait, did they pay you? So they paid you $8 for the RAM and $7 for shipping?
Correct. So I have a total price that was paid of $16.
I'm sure you could probably put that in like an envelope with a little bit of bubble wrap, and I'll bet it would send.
Yeah, but why is it? I just don't. Hang on, carrier packaging. Let's do a padded envelope. It's still $8.74. Where is this going to? It's staying in California. What? This is highway robbery.
Why don't you just hand deliver it then?
That's honestly a better idea, and just pocket the difference. Then I could make a whole $8. Let's see how far of a drive this is. All right, let's see. I'm not going to read the I almost read the address out loud. That's yeah,
maybe,
bad.
Maybe not.
Well, maybe not do that. You know what? I really made a... Hello? Maps quit unexpectedly?
Well, I've never seen that happen.
Why is map... And it's doing it over and over again. That's the third time. Okay, I guess I will have to spend $8 on... I don't know why I thought it was a good idea to list this RAM for sale. I should have just... I don't know. I felt bad because I always have... I have a whole RAM bucket, all right? And...
Of course.
Oh, this guy's rich. Damn.
Are you looking at Street View?
Yeah, he's rich.
Maybe you should, like, if you go and deliver and you're like, hey, you know, I'm in the area, can I hang out for a little bit? Maybe you can make a new friend.
That's right? A good idea. Where is oh, he's rich.
Oh, okay.
Where? Oh, he's in Bay Area.
Oh.
I'll just give it to you.
Okay, sounds
good. I should probably stop talking about the person that bought this RAM. I feel like I'm revealing too much. Anyway, we now have... What happened? What's the thing that happened?
What?
We were going to say... I forget what we were about to talk about.
Oh, the Snapdragon. Before you do that, before we talk about that, I will just say I put a couple of Blu-rays... I have a Blu-ray collection. I put a couple of Blu-rays that I never use up on eBay, and... I sold like one or two of them, and I think after like paying for shipping and whatever, I made like $1 on each one of them. So it was a huge. It was
it's
more
like, what's
just
the point.
It was more just to get rid of it, but it was also like a huge waste. Like it would have been better to just throw them away or like donate them to Goodwill or something. So I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, anymore. Yeah. Well, throwing away, no, don't do that.
I'm not
going to donating.
Do that.
That's the way to go. Because there's definitely been things that I've sold, but it's typically with larger things. Like, this is not taking up very much space, so I don't really care if that's in a drawer or if I don't have it at all. But, like, an iMac, right? I'll get an iMac from a video, and that I will sell at a loss just because I'm like, I just don't have room for this. I don't want to have this.
Yeah.
So that's fair. Blu-rays and RAM, though, we gotta work on that, Noah. That's not good.
Yeah, I think donating. I don't know about the RAM. I don't know if anyone's gonna pick up RAM from a Goodwill, but Blu-rays could definitely go to Goodwill.
Oh, I have a topic that I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
I wanted to talk. This is maybe a little bit out of our typical conversation, but I wanted to talk about Spotify.
Ooh.
And specifically in regards to Apple Music. So for all of the Apple brain people like me that are immediately like, I'm bored of that, I want to talk about that. Wait a minute. So last week, Spotify increased their prices for the premium plan to, I think it's $11.99?
Yeah, I think so.
And now people on Twitter and in the news were like, hang on a minute. Apple Music is now cheaper than Spotify by $1 a month, and you get high-quality, spatial, lossless, and Dolby Atmos audio, which you cannot get on Spotify because they only have, like, pretty crap encoding. So over here, as an Apple Music OG, someone who has been subscribed basically since it launched in 2015. I feel extremely vindicated because people are finally turning on Spotify, and I knew all along, starting back in 2015, I knew Apple Music, this is the way to go. I want this in my life. And now after spending, how many months has it been since 2015? 9 years times 12 months, that's 108 months, times an average of, let's call it $10.50 a month. After now spending $1,134 on Apple Music, I can tell you with an absolute certainty that I made the right call and that Spotify is for nerds.
Well, I will take the other side because I am a Spotify user and I have been a Spotify user since 2017. Cringe.
Less time than me. Plus cringe.
Okay, well, here's what I will say about Spotify. The first thing that I think is really funny, did you see the news report recently that Spotify is launching a $10.99 plan that is identical to the one that they just raised the price of, minus audiobook time, which I don't know which nobody cares about.
So
I thought that was kind of funny.
I think it is funny because basically what they did is just kind of command Z that previous decision. Like, there's no way that they just also happened to do that a couple days later. Like, people were mad when they increased the price, so then they took out the audiobooks and said, fine, here's your old price.
Yeah.
Because nobody, who cares about audiobooks? That's ridiculous.
I don't... First of all, I didn't even realize... First of all, I don't listen to audiobooks. Second of all, I don't want them in the Spotify app. Like, there can be... And even podcasts. I don't really want podcasts in the Spotify app because I don't listen to... Well, other than this podcast, I don't really listen to podcasts.
Don't... Be careful, Noah. You're treading on thin ice. We're on a podcast. We are on Spotify.
No, I know. That's a dangerous thing to say. If I for me personally, separate app could be, but definitely for audiobooks. They don't need to be in the Spotify app. But I didn't realize, do I get free audiobook something? I was looking up an article and it says something like you get 15 hours of monthly audiobook listening time. I didn't even know that was like a thing that apparently I have, but I didn't even know that.
Yeah, and also, what happens when you max that out? Like, 15 hours isn't a set, like, what if you were midway through a book? And it's like, and then Harry Potter died. You have now run out of time. Please purchase more audiobook time. Like, what? How does that work?
I don't...
Do they just stop?
Okay, here's the thing. I was really confused because I saw this article that was like, oh, they're doing this $10.99 a month plan without audiobooks. I was like, wait, I thought audiobooks all cost money. And so I went into the Spotify app on my phone and I looked up a random audiobook and it was like, you have to buy this, but you can't buy it in the app because of the whole Apple whatever thing. They're like, if you buy it on like outside of the app, you can listen to it here. And I was like, okay, so you have to buy the audiobook. Does that mean that it's not free, or that it like maybe you pick that book online and then you get your 15 hours? I don't know. Really, really, really weird.
Yeah, that I don't really get that. But I guess in a way you could argue that by drawing attention to this, it is also doing advertising for people that don't even know, like both of us, that they had audiobooks in the first place. Because now we know that, and maybe some people, maybe seven total people would say, oh, I want audiobooks. I want to pay $1 per month for 15 hours of audiobook time.
I guess. I mean, I'm on a family plan, so it doesn't really affect me, but if I were on an individual plan, I would immediately downgrade and save that extra $1.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, even though it's literally $12 a year, just as a matter of principle, I would do it. You see, I think people don't understand how petty I am willing to be when it comes to subscriptions, okay? Because here's the thing. Every single one of them is set up to be a nominal amount of money that you look at and you go, well, it's really not that much. That's like an appetizer or a salad at a restaurant. And for that, I get all of this music. I'll do it. I'll spend the dollar. I'll upgrade to the ad-free Amazon Prime that didn't previously exist because they put ads in and made your life worse. I'll spend the extra. It's only $5 a month. Who cares? I care, okay? I pay for Twitter Premium for one reason and one reason alone, and that is to extract more money from Twitter than I pay them, okay? I tell you this. I have never made more than $40 off of my Twitter Premium account because I don't tweet enough and they pay like crap. But as long as the amount of money that they pay me is more than $8, I'm going to keep paying it. That's literally, that is my rationale. And I know it doesn't matter. But in any situation like that, I will do whatever is physically possible to nickel and dime and pay the least amount. I watch ads on Amazon Prime. I plug my eyes and ears. I go like that. I'm like, la, 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 la. I'm like, I will not be advertised to and I will not pay a penny more than I did. That's how I take it.
No, I think that's fair. I think, like, I mean, whatever. We can go on about subscriptions. Like, one thing that I've noticed a lot of apps start, like, have subscriptions. And these are, like, apps that don't need them. Like, let me put it this way. If you, like, if I'm building, you know, you're building an app and you have, like, a server and you have to pay a monthly cost for that server to keep it up, to keep the app working, then I get it, right? If you have a one-time cost, then, you know, hopefully you can keep getting people to join. But if you have that subscription, you know you're getting money every month so you can pay your bills every month. But I've seen apps that don't have monthly costs that they'll introduce. I saw some, I don't remember what it was, and I obviously don't want to, like, you know, flame them or whatever, but it was some, like, to-do app recently that had a monthly subscription. And it was like, you need a monthly subscription to add more than two to-do items and you know, whatever, and put tags on your reminders or something. And it was, there was no server. I think it used like iCloud Sync, which is just part of the Apple developer thing. But they're like, you know, you pay $2 a month or you could pay like $18 for a lifetime thing. And I just like, I don't like the subscription model. If you can offer something for a one-time payment, I would much prefer that. It's like this, like the seats in the, what was it, in Audi or BMW? Who was doing that? It was BMW, right? With the heated seats.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's right. I forgot. And that was in Europe, I think. I don't think that was in America, but they wanted to pay, they wanted to charge you like, I don't think it was very much, maybe $5 a month. But there is something just disgustingly icky about paying a subscription to unlock the capabilities of a hardware feature.
Mm-hmm.
But then also, I guess we don't think the same way about Tesla full self-driving, which, I don't know. I get that that's a different thing, but you never hear people complain about the subscription for FSD.
That's true. And I was going to say, like, they're constantly updating it, but, like, that's true of a lot of these other subscriptions. Like, you know, like streaming services are constantly adding more content, you know, especially movie and TV streaming. Like, they're constantly making originals. And then, I mean, I guess maybe the difference is, like, there's a lot of streaming services. So it's like, do you need Netflix and Hulu and Max and blah, 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 blah. I guess there's only one Tesla. So it's like, if you have a Tesla, it's like either you get it or, so maybe it's a little bit different, but still, not only that, but Tesla is using your data to train and improve their network anyways. So, like, I don't know. It is weird that people don't complain about that.
I mean, I think it makes a little bit more sense in that case, but let's get back on track here. I want to talk about Apple Music because I think that this is what Apple does, okay? They are late to all of the stuff that they do. They were late to having a mapping app, and it sucked. But now Apple Maps is the best maps. Like, I'm sorry, I know you use Google Maps, but Google Maps is stinky, all right? I need you to understand this, Noah. Have you ever gone on the Google Maps and, like, looked at their 3D models? It looks like a crude drawing by a 9-year-old on a 2003 Intel Celeron, okay? It looks like crap. Apple Maps, they've got, like, lighting and, like, it's like a little diorama. You get to go play around in it. And then Apple Music, same thing. It started out, it was ass. Everyone made fun of me because I was on Apple Music and I was a dumb nerd. Now they're all the dumb nerds because I have spatial audio, Dolby Atmos, SharePlay, all of this great stuff, integration with the ecosystem. And look, they're going to do it again with AI. They're always last. But then, and also they always suck at first, but then they figure it out. And then you're like, okay, I get it now. That's my take.
That's fair. I will clarify. I use Google Maps in my car because it's built into my car with Android Automotive. But if I'm on my phone, like if I'm looking at directions or looking at places, I use Apple Maps. I agree with you. Apple Maps looks better. The maps look nicer. They look cleaner. Like it's easier to see what's going on. So I agree with you. I agree with you on that. I also will say that the reason that I use Spotify, the primary reason, kind of a dumb reason, but the reason is because I use Last.fm to keep track of all of my music, and Spotify has built-in support for it. So I can, and they even made it better since I started using Spotify, where literally I link my Spotify account to my Last.fm account, and then if I listen to Spotify on any device, my phone, my computer, my car, whatever, it will all go to Last.fm. It used to be that you had to sign in on every app, so I have to sign in on my phone and sign in on my computer, and then the car, like, or whatever, some of them couldn't do it because they didn't have the setting, but now it's like server side, so it just works and it's really good. So that's the reason, and Apple Music doesn't have that. If it did, then I could consider switching, but I also like that Spotify has a much richer API for building developer like features, like integrations with it. So those are the things that I like about Spotify. But from a pure user perspective, I'm just listening to some music. I agree that Apple Music is actually pretty nice, and it's definitely gotten a lot better than, you know, when it first came out.
Same thing with CarPlay. They weren't the first to do like a hands-free, and then it's the best. I'm just saying, I think the pattern is here, and I think it's going to be only a matter of time before you end up switching to Apple Music. Although, the Last.fm thing is a good point, because Apple never likes to be as public and like sharing of the data. I think that's the primary benefit of Spotify. It's not just that integration, but like the playlists and sharing playlists with your friends, and the social aspect of it, which I think a lot of people like. And also, a lot of people just have had Spotify for a really long time, and they don't really feel like if who in this day and age is out here going, "Huh, I sure would like to stream music rather than purchasing my vinyl records. I have all of these albums on CD-ROM, and I sure would like to explore this new world of streaming. I've never done it before, and I'm gonna start right now." Like, no. Everybody already has something. It's just a matter of, like, do they want you to pay more for it? That's the problem. We're in a mature society here, all right? That's the problem with subscriptions. It's mature, right? Nobody is out here, like, signing up for Netflix for the first time because they just heard of it. No one, literally no one in this society, especially in the United States, is going, what's this Netflix thing that all these people keep talking about? We're beyond that. Now it's a matter of, like, the only way for them to increase their revenue is bump subscription prices or force people who were sharing subscriptions to buy their own. That's the only way to do that. And the same is now happening with the music, right? Apple Music used to be $9.99 and now it's $10.99. Spotify, I think, was less than Apple Music at one point, right?
I think it was usually $9.99, or it might have been less at some point. I had the student plan at some point. I know both of them have that, but yeah, it used to be cheaper.
And the problem is it's not going to get cheaper, okay? Because it's a mature marketplace. In the same way that streaming, if you add up all the streaming services that you would need to get if you wanted to have the ability to watch anything, at Amazon Prime, Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, HBO Max, what are some other ones? Paramount Plus,
Showtime,
MGM, Stars. Showtime, Stars, yeah. So that's nine. You can definitely keep going, but even just those things are now well above what you were previously paying for cable. But the whole point of streaming was an alternative to cable. But this is what happens, right? You have an established thing. People don't like that thing. Someone else comes in and says, we can make this a better experience and save you money. They gain a massive amount of users. And then they go, uh-oh, everyone already has this. How do we make more money off of this? How do we continue with endless growth? And then you have to raise prices. And then all of a sudden, you are just cable now. And people don't like it. So when is the, give it a couple of years. Maybe someone's going to come up with we could download music directly into your brain or whatever. I don't know. It's an interesting food for thought. And I do worry that right now with music, it's kind of a two-horse race, right? Is anyone really, be so for real right now. Do you know a single person who uses YouTube Music as their streaming service? One single person.
I don't think, okay, maybe one person, but I think that might be in addition to something else. There's also Tidal. I don't know anyone that uses Tidal personally.
Yeah, maybe that's more of an enthusiast niche type of thing.
Yeah. But yeah, I definitely, music is an interesting one because I feel like, in a lot of these streaming, there's streaming, there's music streaming, and then there's like TV and movie streaming. I feel like those are the, and I guess there's like audiobooks and whatever else. But like the thing about music streaming is it's constantly expanding, right? There's so much music released every day. And the thing about music streaming, which is different than like TV or movies, is that stuff doesn't get removed very often. Like things will get removed if there's a conflict, whatever. I think there was a thing with Taylor Swift some time ago that some of her music got removed from streaming, and there can be things like that, but for the most part, it doesn't happen. Whereas on movie and TV, it happens a lot more often because, well, first of all, some of the Netflix will get third party, TV shows and movies, and they'll have a limited license and they'll come and go. And even some originals on these channels will be sold to other networks, or they'll, go off the site, whatever. But yeah,
which I hate.
I was trying to watch. There's a thing about Uber. It was like the story of Uber TV show, and I think it used to be on Showtime, and it's not there anymore. And I was like, it's a Showtime. It was like a Showtime original, I think, and it's not on Showtime. And now you have to buy it in order to watch it. I was like, I didn't understand what happened to that.
Yeah, you're right. I remember I was actually just talking about that today, and I was like, I should watch that. And I looked it up, and I was like, what? Why? What? Where is it? Where to go? Like, you just hold it hostage like that and make you buy it for like $100 or something? Like, who's gonna do that? Like, this is, I think, and someone else pointed out in the chat here that taxis are now cheaper than Ubers. But the whole point of Uber was to undercut the taxi and make it more convenient. But what's happening now, I feel like this is kind of a global thing, right? Or a universal thing. The digital economy, the gig economy, that's what they love to say on the news. The gig economy is ruining everyone's life because all of these things came in as a way to be more convenient, and then they became the default and they aren't well thought out. Taxis are very well thought out. Like, there's a very good reason why a taxi depot exists the way that it does, right? Typically, they're run by a central office that maintains a fleet of cars, and that fleet of cars is then leased to the taxi drivers who will in many cases work as a freelance operation, but with a standard and maintained vehicle that's recognizable and equipped for that situation. With Uber, it's like, hey, yeah, just give them a phone and throw them out there. It's just let it be whatever it wants. And so you end up in these wacky situations. Like a couple weeks ago, I was trying to take an Uber with a group of four people. So there's four of us total. Mm-hmm. And the Uber of choice on that particular day was a Toyota Camry. Okay. Camry seats five people, one driver, four occupants. We fit. And that's what they say on the app. They say 1 to 4 people. Fair enough. Uber pulls up. I go to get in. As I approach the door, I'm like, you know, as you do, you're like, hey, for Luke. And he goes, I don't know what he said. He just mumbled something. I'm like, have my hand on the door handle. I hear the door clock, the lock click. And he just drives away. He almost ran my foot over.
What the heck?
And I was just like, what the hell? What the hell? Like, oh, that's
weird.
That does not happen with a taxi driver, because it's like a guy and he's sitting in there and he's got his whole like setup and the meter and there's like a partition in the back and it's like a standard experience. And you're not just going to get some random guy, Craig, over here in his Camry, who's just like, nah, see ya. And then you have to wait another 15 minutes for a different Uber.
Yeah. I don't know. These things, I always think about the like food delivery, because I never, I think I've done that once or twice, and that was when I had COVID like 2 years ago. That was the only time I ever did food delivery, and I think that was maybe a good excuse. But it used to be like before these things existed, the restaurants would have like a delivery driver or maybe multiple, and like you would order. And then I guess they would wait for maybe a couple of orders to accumulate. And then they would send the driver with the orders and the driver would go drop it off. And I'm not saying it's the most ideal scenario, but like it's a lot better than, you know, whatever Uber Eats and what's it called? Grubhub, where they're like sitting in their mm-hmm. car and they're like, oh, I'm going to go drive to this restaurant, pick up the thing, drive to the person. It's like such a like weird, I don't know. It's like so much extra work just to get someone's food to them. And then, you know, you pay them a tip. It's so much more expensive, first of all, right? So much more expensive. It takes longer. The food's probably not going to be as hot and fresh when it gets to you. And then the, you know, whatever company, Uber Eats or whatever, they're going to take a lot of the money from that transaction.
And did you know, Noah, that sometimes the food delivery apps, here's the other problem, right? Because this is not being run by the restaurant, that offers them some convenience, right? Because they don't have to hire a delivery guy who sits around and, you know, oh, someone's meal is ready, but the guy is still out, so we can't send it. So yeah, it is in many ways more convenient. However, there have been a lot of instances of these apps basically listing restaurants on Uber Eats without their knowledge. This is not something I thought. I thought that you had to say, we want to be on Uber Eats, let's apply. No, they can list a restaurant without the restaurant even knowing. And so they get all of these online orders that look like a normal order for pickup by, you know, Craig. And then Uber Eats driver comes and picks it up. And I saw this, I think John Oliver talked about this on Last Week Tonight. And there was a clip from this news segment where this like bakery, they make like smoothies or something, right? And it's like a, you go into the store to get the smoothie. It's not really meant for delivery. And so everything is uncovered. Like there's no lid on it. Because it's, oh, you know, yeah, you pick it up. So it's like this uncovered smoothie is just sitting in some random dude's car where he's probably spitting on it as he's on the phone or like doing whatever, picking his nose, and like, and it melts, and then it shows up as this like horrifying biome of diseases. God, I hate the gig economy.
I did see, I think I saw that clip that you're talking about. I think And then it gets to, like, then there's a whole thing of, like, ghost kitchens, right? Everything has to go to its logical conclusion. But that, I think, is just fascinating. And you know what? It's not even necessarily the worst thing. Like, I get it. If you have a kitchen and it's not being fully utilized and you can use it to, you know, you can give more people jobs and you can fully utilize the kitchen, you know, get 100% of the value, whatever. I get it. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I do think it's just genuinely fascinating. Like, you can go on the app and you can see 10 different restaurants. I think it's really the app's fault that they don't specify. They'll just say there's 10 different restaurants with their own names and logos and everything, but they all have the same address because they're all coming from the same kitchen. And I just, it's just very, like, it's, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's very weird. And that only exists because of these, you know, food delivery apps. I don't think it would exist otherwise.
Yeah. And you don't think it's a bad, you're not saying it's a bad thing. I am. I think it sucks. I think it's awful.
What do you think is bad about ghost kitchens?
I mean, where do you want to start? Let's start with this. They are absolutely taking over in some markets. I don't know if you've seen, Eddie Burback did a phenomenal video on ghost kitchens where he exposed the shit out of all of these big operations. Most of them are like corporate private equity backed, which is already a recipe for disaster. You know, if it's being run by a bunch of like 30 something hustlers in golf shirts, you know, it's not going to go well. That's let's just be very clear about that. But it's more than just let's use an unused kitchen. It's like this weird algorithm hacking operation that tries to replicate a real restaurant to overcharge you for very crappy food. Sometimes they're like reheating Trader Joe's meals and passing that on as food. I mean, it is food, but like passing that on as an actual restaurant just like a microwavable mac and cheese. And then in addition to that, there's the whole side of like what it's doing to commercial real estate and like the restaurant industry. Like I've been looking at office space around LA, and many, many listings will say like perfect for ghost kitchen, could be the site of your ghost kitchen. Like there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them, and they're pushing out real restaurants. They're not typically very good food. Eddie tried a bunch in his video and said that they were all pretty mid, and he paid like $20 for like a chicken sandwich before delivery fees. So it's like, yeah, I think they suck. I think they're terrible.
Okay, I will rephrase and say I think conceptually they could be good in some cases, but I think it's more of what I was trying to get at, that like everything has to be taken to its logical conclusion of like there can't just be, you know, a delivery driver that delivers like for the restaurant, that delivers food for the restaurant. It has to be some random person that like goes and does it for you and whatever. And then they're like, oh, but there can't just be one restaurant in this kitchen. There has to be 10 restaurants in this kitchen. And yeah. I agree. Like, you know, I'm sure it's not gonna be the best food if the one kitchen is making, you're not gonna get like authentic food or like really good food if it's, you know, the one kitchen's making 10 different, you know, cuisines or whatever. I agree. The way that it is implemented, the way that it exists right now is not good.
I think you're right though in general, right? Everything has to be taken to its logical conclusion. And that's kind of how the free market works, for better or for worse. In a lot of cases, that's what it means. It means, okay, we're not going to pay a delivery guy because we're going to have, you know, random people do it. But then if random people are doing the delivery, why even have a restaurant? All you need is a kitchen and a window. And then if you're only using a kitchen, then why only have one restaurant? You might as well have multiple restaurants. And, you know, when it goes to streaming, it does that too. It's like everything gets taken to its logical conclusion. I was in an Uber to go to the airport, and the dude was talking about how he can't afford to do it because he's renting the car that he's driving. And I was like, wait, what? What do you mean you're renting the car that you're driving the Uber in? And as it turned out, he was like literally going to Hertz and renting a car and then driving Uber in that car. And it was like $70 a day for the rental plus gas to get that car to do the Uber to. And I was like, hang on, just the math does not add up here. Like, this is what the gig economy has created. It's like you use this like weird car rental service to pay for your ability to do the Uber service. And it's like this confluence of weird gig economy overlapping things that are each creating a problem and then trying to solve someone else's problem. It's like, why use your own car for Uber? Rent one from us. But $70 a day for a Volkswagen Tiguan this guy was paying. And I was like, wow, that's awful. That is $2,100 a month. Okay? I was like, why on earth would you possibly be paying $2,100 a month to rent a Volkswagen Tiguan when you could lease one for $350 a month and then drive that? Or buy it? Or like, I'm like, none of this makes any sense anymore. Why are we doing this?
I know. And then it's like, even if you have your own car, it's like, you got to pay for gas on that car. Uber's not paying you for gas. Maybe there's some like whatever like fee that like supposedly helps you, whatever, whatever. But like, you have to pay for your own gas and your own insurance and your own like whatever wear and tear and maintenance your car needs. It's like at some point, it's like not worth it anymore. It's like, and the people that do that, like, I am not looking down on people that drive, that do these, you know, gig economy things, because people need to make money. It's a way to make money. But like, as a society, we can make better opportunities for people to make money, because these things don't pay very well. And they, like, you do you watch the Ryan Trahan Penny series? You ever watch those videos?
I have seen those, yeah.
I watched that thing when he did the like 30-day one, and he would do like Uber Eats and like that kind of delivery stuff, and he would make like, he'd be like, oh, I did it for 3 hours and I made like $20. And I'm like,
That's less than minimum wage.
I'm saying, like, for your video that you're just trying to, you know, just trying to cross America starting from a penny, I'm like, you know, it's cool. It's a video. He's making a game, whatever. But like, for real people that are relying on this, that's like horrible.
Yeah. No, and I think that's exactly the point. I'm not trying to, I apologize if it sounded like I was looking down on people that do
this.
I don't
think you did.
I think it's that these companies are taking advantage of them. That's what it is. Like, Uber is taking advantage. Every single person who drives for Uber or Uber Eats or DoorDash or any one of those rideshare or food delivery companies, that is a company taking advantage of your labor. All of these other things, like the rent a car from us to use for Uber, they are literally just, that's just one more middleman, right? If you think about it, like in the example of this guy in his Volkswagen Tiguan, where he's driving around, he's talking about how he's getting absolutely shafted. I'm like, yeah, because I paid $32 for this ride. Uber is taking some of that. The person that you rented this car from is taking some of that. And your gas is taking some of that. And your insurance and all of these things, all of these fingers in the pie. And the pie is only $32.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, I don't really see a way. Like, there's a reason that it's uneconomical. And that's because it's impossible to give someone a ride in a car with human labor hours for that cheap without someone getting screwed. And it sure as heck is not going to be the big corporation that gets screwed, because that's kind of how they set it up to be.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know how we got here, but this is a very interesting
Well, we started with Spotify.
Discussion. And we started with Spotify, and we went to rideshare is taking advantage of people in our in our society.
Well, I after that, I feel like it almost sounds a bit pedestrian to ask what your thoughts are on the iPhone 16 rumors.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of a shift in tone, but yeah. What do we have here? Like 15 minutes left. We can talk a little bit about Apple here, I think.
I think so. I think that's a good plan. It is not new ground for us
to talk about
like
Apple.
We do have some experience in that area.
That is true. Yeah, I think we can. Hopefully, we did a good job talking about these, Uber and Grubhub and whatever. But we can definitely do a good job talking about Apple. So we can do that.
And I'll tell you what, I am so glad that Apple Intelligence is not a subscription model, because that would have probably been my 13th reason. I think I'm like, dude, subscriptions are out of hand. It's too much. And Apple Intelligence, I think, is a good idea, because the whole benefit to this AI and, you know, the applications that will be useful are integrating it. I would love to see this year for the iPhone 16. I'm very curious to see, from a hardware perspective, what changes with AI now being an explicit focus, right? Because we've had the neural engine since the A11 Bionic, which came out in 2017. So machine learning, on-device processing, that has been a focus at Apple for a long time. But never have we had such an explicit, you know, LLM, generative AI focus. And now we have that. So it kind of makes you wonder, especially given that they're only supporting it on the A17 Pro, what's next? How do we push that further with a new generation of Apple Silicon to actually justify the fact that it barely runs on any iPhone?
That's a good question. Like, when you brought up, iPhone 16 rumors, I was thinking, well, I think the bezels are supposed to be a little bit smaller and, you know, they might add a capture button and some things like that. But it is a really interesting question of, like, are they going to do hardware things to support Apple Intelligence, which is clearly their big focus? And, you know, the short answer is, like, yeah, obviously they're going to change the chip and they'll make it more powerful for LLM and generative AI kind of tasks. And I'm sure that they'll call that out, you know, in the keynote. They'll talk about how they optimized for it. Maybe we'll see some Apple Intelligence features that we haven't seen yet that will be announced with the new iPhone. Maybe they'll be exclusive, or maybe Apple will just say, you know, you saw these features and they're gonna be even more powerful on the next iPhone. So they'll definitely do that, make the chips more powerful and focus on that. I wonder, like, are they going to do anything to the hardware? Like, we have the action button. Maybe you could tie the action button to, well, I guess Apple Intelligence is you hold the side button. Maybe the action button could be like the ChatGPT thing or some other AI something or other. But, like, I don't know. Are they going to do something else?
Funny that you mentioned that. Because literally as you said that, somebody in the chat here had a very good point. And you've forgotten something. No, we don't just have the action button. On the iPhone 16, we have the new capture button.
Yeah.
So, could that capture button be a, what is this thing I'm looking at? Could it be an interface with a visual AI? Could it be, I mean, I think this is a reasonable question. Like, we had the action button last year, and I personally like it. I don't think, it's not a feature that I use all the time. But it's not really set up to be a feature that you use all the time. It's not like a power button or a volume button, right? Mm. You have a specific task that you want it to do. I have mine set to open the camera to video, so I can just do that to take a video real quick. I've been thinking about changing it to photo potentially, but now with the capture button, I could have both, right? So I think that's a very good question. How do you take these hardware features and tie it in with AI? Because that's not something that's going to get rumored. You know, we didn't really know anything about what Apple Intelligence was going to entail, because it's way easier to keep software a secret. So we've heard about the capture button. We've heard about this hardware change. Could it be an AI button?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking, yeah, I did mention, definitely the capture button is a rumor. I think it's interesting because when I was thinking about that, I was like, okay, the capture button, you can press it to like do a photo. Maybe you can double press or long press or whatever. I don't know. But like already you can access the camera from the lock screen. There's either the button, like the shortcut button, or you can just slide over, slide to the left and you'll get the camera. Or you could assign it to the action button if you want. I guess if there's a dedicated button, you can freeze up the action button to do something else. I'm going to be honest, I never use my action button. I don't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
It's set to the video mode like you have it, but I don't take videos that often, and I also, like, never think to use it. I, like, forget that it's even there.
Yeah, I agree. I definitely use it exceedingly sparingly.
Yeah.
Which I don't personally think is a problem, because what's the alternative, right? How often were you using the mute switch, realistically? For me, it was unbox the phone, put it on mute, never touch it again.
Yeah, same. I agree. So it's definitely, I'd say that was maybe a lateral move. Like I will say that the action button is like objectively better because you can assign it to mute or something else. I just don't really use it. But I think the capture button, I didn't even think about it, but I'm like, okay, it's a button, you know, you press it once to do photo, twice to do video, long hold, whatever. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, maybe it does do something with the AI, because that would make a lot more sense to me than just like, oh, here's another shortcut button for camera, even though there's already multiple shortcuts to the camera. Like, maybe you can press it to do a photo or double press for a video, but maybe if you press and hold it, like, you know, you press and hold the side button to do Siri right now, maybe if you press and hold the capture button, it'll do, you know, what am I looking at, that kind of thing that you said, or some other AI integration. And that would, I think that makes a lot of sense. Apple really wants to fully integrate AI hardware and software, and that seems like a logical way to do it.
I agree. Do you remember the rumor in terms of like functionality for that button about the half press?
What was that? Vaguely, what was that for?
Basically, the rumor is that the capture button would kind of operate like a camera's shutter. Like, you know how on a DSLR, you can kind of, it's like a half, I don't know how to describe
like
it.
To
it's
focus?
Like a half press to focus and then a full press to take a picture.
Yeah.
So maybe something like that. And then if you combine that with like the, if you press and hold it and then it scans, I think that that actually could be a pretty useful thing to have.
Yeah, I wonder, did Apple talk about showing like interacting with a video feed in the keynote where like you could have the camera open and ask like, what am I looking at? Did they talk about that at all? I don't remember that.
I don't think they did. And actually, come to think of it, that might be a challenge for them, because what they did show was using ChatGPT to take an existing photo and share that, like through Siri, you could share that photo. Remember when they were talking about how you have to approve every request that goes to ChatGPT? Mm-hmm. So I feel like that is maybe one potential issue, because most of the in-house Apple Silicon-based Apple Intelligence stuff, that's running on device. But if you're doing a photo scan, I don't think that would be possible. It would have to upload that to be able to process it. And it would have to be able to search the web based on that data. So it would, I think, based on how Apple's operating, that would probably have to be serviced by ChatGPT. I don't think they would do that in-house, because that they don't really want you. I think they want it to be clear that your data is still local and that it's not like a AI pin or whatever, where it's like everything sort of nebulously in and out of and around the cloud.
Yeah, I wonder, like, obviously the new chips in the iPhone are going to have some, they're going to be better and they'll probably focus on AI. And I wonder if they could, I'm not saying this would happen, but like theoretically, if they did, you know, video, you can interact with the AI over video, like show a video and ask questions, you know, Google Lens style, whatever. I wonder if they could say like the new chips in the iPhone have a better image decoder or a whatever core, whatever they're going to call it, to enable this to be possible. And maybe that feature will only work on the new phones. Maybe that's why they didn't talk about it, because the existing hardware, maybe they're saving it for the iPhone because the whatever A17 Pro or whatever's in the current iPhone can't do it. I'm not saying Apple's actually going to do that. That's pure speculation. But like, I wouldn't be extremely shocked if we get a new feature for Apple Intelligence that wasn't announced already, because they're going to be announcing more hardware. Or maybe it's not a new feature, but a new integration, like with the capture button. I think there's going to be a little bit more to the AI story than what we saw at DubDub, you know, when the new iPhones are announced.
I mean, think about it this way. The what iOS version was current for the iPhone 14 Pro? Was that 16?
I want to say. Yeah, right, because 17 for the
17 50, is yeah. now, and then yeah. So when iOS 16 was announced, nothing with capture, nothing with the dynamic island was public knowledge, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then obviously those device specific features come out later. So I mean, there's a plenty of precedent. You even going back to like 2017, right? iOS, I guess that would have been 11.
I
want to say
so, yeah,
maybe 10, so. One of those, whatever number that was, that came out in 2017, that came out before the iPhone 10, obviously, because WWDC is always June, iPhone's always September, and you could very successfully argue that the iOS feel of the iPhone 10 design versus the regular iPhone is totally different, but that's not something that was actually, you know, announced. Because the iOS version is always before, it always precedes the iPhone that it launches with. So I think that not only do I think that you're right, I think it's almost a guarantee that there will be features that we don't know about until the iPhone actually comes out with a new chip, with new capabilities, with new whatever it may be. Like the very fact that the iPhone 15, the current iPhone, doesn't get Apple Intelligence, that tells me that Apple really is trying to push for whatever is happening with these new phones or whatever is happening with the new chips.
Yeah. And there's even, you know, the examples like the always on display, right? And even the action button, right? It's a hardware button, but it's supported by software. Like there's a lot of examples of these things. And now you know, what you just said gives me an interesting question, which is, will the iPhone 16 regular support Apple Intelligence?
I think yes, because it seems like Apple has now moved from all the new phones are on the current chip to a sort of a TikTok. Like the iPhone 15 is running the A16 chip. So in my mind, I think it makes sense that the A17 Pro goes down to the iPhone 16. And then the A18 Pro comes to the iPhone 16 Pro. It's a bit of a numerical tongue twister, but do you know what I mean?
I agree. The one thing that gives me pause, first of all, I agree that it would make sense. It would be very weird. I think it would be weird for Apple to put such an emphasis on this AI stuff and then say, oh, these brand new phones don't get it. That would be a really weird look. It is a little weird that they call the chip the A17 Pro. That was the first time that they did that they added the Pro moniker to the end of the chip, right?
True.
And it almost makes you wonder, first of all, is there a regular A17 not Pro?
Nope.
So are they going to put a quote-unquote Pro chip in the base iPhone, or do you think maybe they'd put a binned version that they would call the A17 in the iPhone 16, and then it's not a Pro chip anymore?
Well, I almost wonder if maybe the Pro is now a moniker for things that will support Apple Intelligence potentially. Like, think back to 2017. Then it was the Bionic, right? They called it the A17 or the A11 Bionic and the A12 Bionic. Like, they gave it that name because of its architecture and as a way to, like, set it apart. So maybe the A17 Pro, like, I don't know. I kind of got the sense that rather than being a tier, it was like a architecture. Because there wasn't an A11 and an A11 Bionic. It's different with Pro, because I feel like Pro in Apple speak typically is associated with the higher performance version of an existing chip. But there is no A17 regular. And kind of like, what else do you put in the iPhone 16? Like, they're not going to keep it on an A16 chip. If they announce an iPhone 16 that doesn't support Apple Intelligence, people are going to freak out. That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
No, I definitely agree. I think it's already weird that the 15 regular and 15 plus don't. And I get, like, whatever. Maybe those chips aren't powerful enough. Maybe they really aren't powerful enough to support it. But it is a weird look at the end of the day. And regarding the Pro, I think it's an example of that weird, like, Apple's very small word bank where, like, the words end up having multiple meanings because they use so few words and they plug them in all over the place. So maybe you're right that the Pro in A17 Pro has a different meaning than the Pro in M3 Pro or M2 Pro or whatever. It's weird, but I could potentially see that being the case. But I agree. I can't imagine the regular iPhone 16 not supporting Apple Intelligence when Apple spent so much time talking about it and hyping it up, and it's clearly the next direction that they're going in. So then, is the regular iPhone 16 going to have the capture button, or is that going to be a Pro-only feature?
I think that it was going to get that. Let me double-check. iPhone 16 capture button. It might be just a Pro thing, but I'm pretty sure the dummy units that I've seen going around have the capture button on all models. I'm sure someone in chat can correct me if I'm wrong. I'm trying to find evidence for this. I can't find an article at the moment, but somebody had said in chat that the iPhone 16 is going to get an A18, and then the Pro iPhone will get the Pro chip. So maybe they will actually introduce a new sort of lower tier. Here's an article from October 2023 where it says iPhone 16 and 16 Plus again rumored to jump from A16 to A18 chip. So maybe it's possible that they could make an A18 and a Pro, and then instead of having the non-Pro iPhone use the old chip, everyone can use a new chip, but basically a binned version for the lesser phones.
Yeah, and that new chip would be powerful enough to support most or all of Apple Intelligence, but it obviously wouldn't be as powerful as the Pro one.
I could see that. But unfortunately, I can also see something else, Noah, and that is the clock.
Oh, yeah. We went a little bit over on this one.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I got a dip. And unfortunately, you're going to dip. We're both going to dip for quite a while.
Oh, yeah. We're going to have to maybe try to find a little time for a bonus episode or something.
I think we can try to figure out we're not going to schedule it now, but we'll give you some advance notice. If you're not subscribed, make sure to turn on notifications. Did you like that? Did you like that little call to action there? That's what they call it in the biz.
Oh, that was pro. I'm learning.
They say, hope you're back before iPhone 16 drops. We will, but honestly, not by much. I think it's going to be August. But we'll try to make something work. We'll try to get a little fun bonus show in July. Well, it's not really a bonus if we're skipping like 5 weeks in a row, but don't worry about that. I'm going to call it a bonus.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you guys so much for watching. I have been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. We will see you next time, whenever that is, and have a great night.